You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Was there ever going to be any doubt? Two from the penalty spot for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Werner strikes it. Goretzka strikes it. And Leon Goretzka scores. And real hope for them of staying in the tournament.
The Euro 2020 group stage finished with a bang, Chris.
It did. Germany saved themselves to squeeze through in the nick of time on a thrilling night in Munich as hungry hearts were broken.
Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo is Portugal's hero yet again, and Spain hit five. We're going to analyse all those results, plus have a look ahead to the round of 16.
Yeah, we'll look at every team's chances of winning UEFA Euro 2020.
Okay, welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly, and joining me is my co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello.
And also with us is the European football expert Kevin Hatchard. Kev, hello.
Hello. What an extraordinary end to the group stage that was.
It's ridiculous, wasn't it, Chris? How good was that?
So good. We had 18 goals on Wednesday. Spain through. Ukraine through. They didn't even play as one of the best third-ranked teams. And then that group of death. From the moment the fixtures were released, you thought, that's going to be some end, isn't it? And it did not disappoint. At the start of Wednesday, Hungary were bottom and going out. At the end, they were bottom and they went out. In between, chaos.
Because I don't even know what
happened. For quite a large proportion of the evening, Germany were heading out. And for a decent amount of the evening, Portugal were heading out. They got an almighty scare, but in the end, as you heard, that goal from Leon Goretzka, enough to just about squeeze Germany through, and both they and Portugal will be feeling unbelievably relieved.
Kev, they will, won't they?
They will, and you have to give Hungary just the most immense credit for that, because the reason we've had jeopardy, the reason that both of those massive football nations were really worried about whether they were going to make it through is because Hungary almost did their bit. And I thought the two goals they scored were stellar. The build-up play for Adam Szoboszlai's header was sensational. Brilliant cross, excellent header, great striker's movement. And then to have been pegged back and seconds later find a second goal with András Schäfer with a superb finish, and again Szoboszlai involved with the assist, I thought was amazing. Not many people would have given them hope of finishing above bottom spot. That's where they've ended up. But what a journey and what an effort.
Okay, let's get into the action then. Group F for the group of death has not disappointed. It was Portugal versus France in Budapest and Germany-Hungary in Munich.
The third and final Group F match day at UEFA Euro 2020. And what will the next 90 minutes hold for us?
Adam Szoboszlai waits in the centre, the ball goes his way, Szoboszlai gets his head to it, and he scored! Wow, what a start for Hungary!
And Cristiano Ronaldo puts Portugal in front, his fourth at the European Championship. It's Benzema who makes it 1-1. He's come right the way through the middle, and he's done it again! Karim Benzema, 2-1 to France. Two from the penalty spot for Cristiano Ronaldo, and Portugal a level.
Kimmich sends it in. Gulacsi was in no man's land there, and Kai Havertz knocks the ball over the line, and Germany have the equalising goal. And it's Schäfer who heads it past Manuel Neuer. Oh, it's absolutely extraordinary. Germany have only just equalised, and Hungary hit them hard with a potentially knockout blow at the other end of the field. Werner strikes it, Goretzka strikes it, and Leon Goretzka scores, and real hope for them of staying in the tournament. Full-time in Germany, Germany have drawn 2-2 with Hungary.
Well, it's honours even in Budapest. Portugal 2, France 2.
Brilliant to relive the drama and I'd argue the most exciting day of Euro action we've had. Day 13 of the competition. Chris, where do you want to start then in this group?
Germany, right? I was going to trick you and say France and then see Germany.
Very, very good. I mean, two incredibly good games. And it's funny when you've got both going on at the same time. Yeah. We were just screaming at our screens and going absolutely mad.
I mean, you heard it there. That moment when just after Germany had equalised and you thought, okay, a sense of normality here. And then I think 91 seconds later, Hungary scored again, and you think this can't be happening, can it? But the great thing about this section was that those two games, there was so much on both of them and they were so relevant. And the match involving Portugal and France was played in Budapest. So you had that added moment. There was probably about, I'd say, 15,000 actual supporters of Portugal and France. The rest were Hungary fans. So they had moments of calm. And then when they heard there was a goal in Munich, they went really loud.
And you could see the players on the bench go, what's happening?
What's happening here? Yeah, and you thought there must have been a goal. But let's start with the match in Munich, because it was, I mean, Kevin, it was an unbelievable game of football. There was so much on the line before the game and it really didn't disappoint. And Germany, I mean, how did they win that match? Or how did they get enough from that game to go through?
Well, they kept on plugging away, and Leon Goretzka is a sensational player and has got better and better and better as he's developed. You could see what he was capable of at times when he was with Schalke, but having made the move to Bayern München, he's gone up a couple of levels physically and mentally. He's so much more intelligent with his movement, the way he brings others into play, the timing of his runs. He's worked on his technique, he's worked on his strength, and he is a fantastic all-round midfielder. So he was able to make the difference ultimately and get that equalising goal. But I think what Germany have is what they call in Germany construction sites. They've got areas of the team they need to work on. They will look at that performance and think, we did ever so well against a very narrow back four against Portugal, found all that space with Joshua Kimmich on one side of the 3-4-3, Robin Gosens on the other. They found it much tougher against Hungary in a back five. So plenty for Germany to think about, plenty for England to think about. They will look at the footage and think, OK, that's where we can maybe hurt Germany.
When I was watching the game and at both spells when Hungary were leading, I was saying to you, Chris, Germany will turn this around. Yeah. Not based on the way they're playing, purely based on historical knowledge of how Germany do turn things around. But it was very, very edgy. And it's funny that we've seen these very opposing quality of performances from them in the space of three games in this tournament.
Yeah, having played some sensational attacking football against Portugal.
They were joyous against Portugal the other day.
Joyous is absolutely the word. And then, you know, Adam Salo plays his club football for Mainz. Two goals in 37 appearances. Did you say he hadn't got a single assist this season, or just one or two?
No assists this season.
Well, he comes up with a goal and an assist in Munich to, as I mentioned, for a long period of time, to knock Germany out of Euro 2020. And then in the end, you know, and this sums it up, I think. I counted just before, actually in the move, as one of them, Jamal Musiala, who came on and was involved in the all-important Goretzka goal. They had Müller on, who we thought was out, but they got him on the pitch because they needed him. Müller, Musiala, Werner, Sané, Volland. There wasn't much tactics or formation.
It was a crazy team at the end, Kev,
we just have to score a goal.
Yeah, and that's concerning in a way, because they've managed to get away with it. But I think going forward, they'll want to obviously have a much more controlled performance in the last 16 and beyond. But you have to give them credit. The one thing I will always say about this Germany team, they're fighters. They really are. And you look at the expression of Joshua Kimmich after full time, that told me a lot, because he didn't look like a man who was happy, didn't look like a man who got through to the last 16. He looked like a man who thought, right, we've done this bit, now we need to go to a new level. I think that's a really positive thing for Germany, because between them, I think they'll work really, really hard to work these things out and work out how they can be much more cohesive and much more like the team that shredded Portugal.
Yeah, it reminded me actually of the England-Wales game at Euro 2016 when Roy Hodgson just threw on every attacker, if you remember, Daniel Sturridge included, who did score, and it worked. And it worked for Germany.
It does sometimes.
It does work sometimes.
And it shows the individual quality they have, because Kai Havertz scored. He's just scored a winning goal in the UEFA Champions League final. Yeah. You've got Timo Werner, who was part of that team. Kevin Folland's had a brilliant season with Monaco. Thomas Müller, he's just Thomas Müller. He is incredibly experienced as well. So you've got all that quality, individual quality. They certainly don't lack that.
Yeah, and we've seen the goal now a few times. It does take a slight deflection. Now, whether the goal from Goretzka to make it 2-2, the all-important one, whether Petr Gulácsi would have saved it, we will never know. Hungary will look back, and as I mentioned, I mean, there were genuinely players crying on the pitch as they went over to their fans, because they gave every ounce that they had, and even when they were knocked back to 1-1. They went and scored again. And they must have thought, or perhaps they had just allowed themselves to think, maybe we actually can do it in this section. And then at that moment, Germany score again, and it's difficult not to feel sorry for that group of players.
On to the other game in the group. That was also a four-goal thriller between Portugal and France. Both teams led in the game. Chris, where do you want to start with this one? I suppose we go first with the Ronaldo penalty and the Hugo Lloris incident.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, this was a brilliant game, wasn't it?
And Bruno Fernandes out of the team, by the way.
Yeah,
it's worth mentioning, isn't it?
And, you know, I think that was absolutely... You know, he was vindicated, Fernando Santos, because one of the best players on the park was Renato Sanches, who I think there was a lot of clamour in Portugal for him to start this game, and he excelled. But yeah, Ronaldo, after Hugo Lloris had come out and collided with Danilo, really, excellent spot from the referee, because he got the ball, but he definitely got the player first. And Ronaldo, of course, he stepped up and scored. Then we had his former Real Madrid teammate, long-time ally, Karim Benzema, scoring from the spot, his first international goal for France since October 2015. And then, I mean, that was 1-1. Then we had another goal from Benzema in the second half before Ronaldo scored another penalty, if you're catching my drift. It was all happening in Budapest, basically. But that the second goal from Ronaldo was an enormous one, because he equaled Ali Dai's all-time record of international goals in men's football, 109. And of course, because Portugal squeezed through, he has the chance now to set a new all-time record as they go into the last 16. But Kevin, just like Germany, there was a good 10, 20 minutes of this game where Portugal were the team who were going out.
Yeah, and the theme with them has been, and you listen to Fernando Santos, the coach, he's always talking about, he talked about wanting the moon. We always want the moon after the defeat to Germany. And what he means by that is, everybody wants me to play all of these attacking players. Everybody wants me to play this expansive football and win games 3 or 4 nil. But if you overreach and you leave yourself out of position, you can get well beaten at this level. And so that balance he's still trying to find, I think. But there were some really important individual moments. You mentioned Renato Sanches. What a job he's done since Euro 2016 to rebuild his career.
Yeah.
He went to Bayern München, it didn't work out. He went to Swansea City, was low on confidence, it really didn't work out. He's gone to Lille, he's won the Liga title, he's had injury problems, but he's never stopped believing in himself. And I think he's always believed he can deliver performances at this level, and he's been vindicated. The other performance I think was key for Portugal going forward, Rui Patricio. He's had a little bit of stick, the goalkeeper. He made a world-class double save at 2-2. He touched a Pogba shot onto the frame of the goal. Brilliant save. Then got straight back up. Griezmann hammered a half volley towards him and he managed to touch it away. That was brilliant goalkeeping.
That was like a training ground routine, actually, wasn't it? Where goalkeepers are being put through their pace and have to spring back up. Karim Benzema, by the way, his first international goal since returning to the fold. It was so interesting, Chris, that he took the penalty given that he missed one in a friendly pre-tournament, trying to get back on the score sheet for Les Bleus. But, I mean, you know, we're talking about Pogba there, and I think we're going to get onto Pogba later on in the show. Outstanding.
Unbelievable.
What
good.
A pass for that Benzema goal for 2. Great finish as well, but his distribution at this tournament's been something else.
Yeah, it has. I think, well, Kevin De Bruyne might disagree, but probably the best passer at Euro 2020 so far. And the way that he dissects team now, almost week by week at this tournament, has been an absolute thing of joy, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, great ball. That was originally given offside, but they checked it and Benzema was onside. And, you know, I think Karim Benzema he'll be delighted with both goals, of course, given his long international absence. But, you know, there'll always be a few who said, well, he's only scored a penalty. So I think to score from open play will also really, really please him. And of course, he now goes into the last 16 full of confidence. And that debate as to whether Didier Deschamps was right to pick him ahead of Olivier Giroud will probably end for, well, at least 10 minutes, I imagine.
Yeah, it was a really good finish from Karim Benzema to make it 2-1 at the time before Ronaldo pegged it back. OK, so we'll continue talking about these teams throughout the course of the show. But Chris, now confirmed, we have the round of 16 fixtures.
I'm actually excited.
Yeah, these are good, aren't they, for the respective teams?
They certainly are. So, okay, it starts on Saturday in Amsterdam, Wales against Denmark. And then the late game on Saturday is Italy against Austria in London. Sunday, the 27th, Netherlands against the Czech Republic in Budapest. Belgium against Portugal, wow, in Seville. Monday, the 28th of June, Croatia against Spain in Copenhagen. France, their prize for their performance that we've just been talking about, is to meet Switzerland in Bucharest. And then the round of 16 finishes on Tuesday, the 29th of June, England-Germany. England-Germany at Wembley Stadium. That is a 6 p.m. Central European summertime kickoff. And then Sweden against Ukraine in Glasgow. Kevin, your pick of those round of 16 ties, maybe apart from England-Germany, which, I mean, that is a crazily good fixture.
I'll take Belgium-Portugal, please.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, isn't
what
it?
What a game. What a game that will be, because I think Belgium have been good without hitting top gear. I think they're capable of more. And I think Portugal are capable of more. And if they both hit top gear at the same time, it could be one of the all-time classic European Championship matches. And I think we've had some great moments, some great games already, but this is sensational, some of the games we have in store.
OK, we'll get to all these fixtures later on in the show as well. Let's get on to Group E's action from Wednesday now, where Sweden topped the group after a thrilling win over Poland.
Lustig and Isak and Forsberg, and 1-0 Sweden. Forsberg, smashing goal. His tournament, his day again. Lewandowski, beauty. Class is permanent, and his class is of a very, very high level. Jankowski lifts it in, and Lewandowski scores for Poland, who have 6 minutes to find salvation. And the job is done for Sweden with finality and finesse by Viktor Claesson.
So it ended 3-2 to Sweden after that 93rd minute winner from Claesson. Poland finished bottom of the group with just 3 points. As you heard there, Emil Forsberg scored Sweden's first 2 goals, and he spoke to us after that incredible match.
Yeah, it was a crazy beginning. I think we scored our only goal. It was good for us. We could play a little bit on the result, and they, of course, had to win to go through, and you could see that they were playing a little bit more desperate than us. They put some balls in the box. They tried to create some chances, had some big chances to score. Didn't, so we had some luck, and then we scored 2-0, and normally after that the game should be over. I think the 2 goals that they got was too easy, but in the end we scored the third one, and yeah, it's pure happiness now. I'm so happy, I'm proud of the team and what we achieved this group stage, so now I'm just happy. Yeah, we want to go through, of course. We said it before we came here that we want to go through the group, but in the end we want to go through, we want to win every game we can. It's going to be tough, but that's our goal.
Prior to that late winner, Emil Forsberg had scored Sweden's last 4 goals at major championships, and they'd all come in St. Petersburg. Isn't that unusual?
Very.
Including one at the World Cup in 2018. Great day for him, Kev. And he really, you know, we were talking about it pre-tournament. Zlatan Ibrahimovic was supposed to come back, got that injury, couldn't join the squad. And Emil Forsberg continues to prove why he's got that number 10 shirt, why he's such a key player.
He's a technician. He really is. He's so gifted. I mean, you look at the way he takes the goals, takes them supremely well, beautiful strikes. He's always so measured in everything he does, always so intelligent with his movement. And I think you're right. I think the void, if you like, left by Zlatan has been filled by Alexander Isak, who's had some lovely moments in attack. Dejan Kulusevski, who is a great young player, is getting better all the time. And when you see him have a tangible impact on the team, it's great to see. And Forsberg, and he is a player that hasn't always been a regular starter for Leipzig in the season just gone, and I think that's really helped him in this tournament, because he's a player that Julian Nagelsmann, the then Leipzig coach, was happy to use sparingly, sometimes as an impact player, and I think we've seen the benefit of that, because he still looks fresh and he still looks sharp.
Took him 81 seconds to score the opener against Poland, so he definitely was that at the start of this game, Kevin. And you know, just a word on Sweden, I think, who we knew that they were through before Wednesday evening's matches, but they ensured that they won the group, Rob, and it's their first time into the knockouts at a Euro since 2004. Now, they've been out in the group stage in the last three final tournaments, so I think this is another this summer, it's another step forward. Remember, for a team who reached the FIFA World Cup quarterfinals, and they, in terms of nations, Kev, at this summer's tournament, who know exactly what they're doing, exactly what they're supposed to do. Would you put Sweden right at the top? Janne Andersson has them so well drilled, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And the thing is, Chris, he's a guy that's done this at club level as well with Norrköping. He's a guy that can maximise the potential of a group of players that he has. And they have this base and they know what they're doing defensively. I think Danielsson and Lindelöf have been superb at the heart of that defence. And he says to them, right, we don't give anything away, and then the flair players can do their bit. The performers can't perform if you don't build the stage first. And they've done that exceptionally well at this tournament.
Robert Lewandowski with two goals. He also missed an incredible chance in the first half where he hit the bar. Well, he hit the bar twice, actually, from a couple of metres out. Unbelievable. But he got two goals. His first was sensational. But his tournament comes to an end despite his goal-scoring heroics for Poland. Also in Group E, what a performance from Spain to win their first match of Euro 2020. They qualified for the last 16 in second spot after thrashing Slovakia in Seville.
Sarabia off the bar. Oh, and the goalkeeper, Dubravka. What a calamity for Slovakia. Laporte, two. And Spain are rising to the challenge. Clipping it out here for Jordi Alba. Sarabia! Three goals for the three-time champions. He's only just on. Ferran Torres, first touch. They might still get another here. Pau Torres off the defender. Five for Spain.
Well, they were really at it, Spain, so in the end. What a performance after that early penalty miss from Alvaro Morata. They do have an issue from the penalty spot, don't they? I don't think they've scored any of their last five. The result, by the way, that despite the fact that Slovakia finished third, Chris, they don't go through.
No, that they actually only needed a point to be guaranteed to go through, but they were one of the two worst ranked third place teams due to this defeat because they had a minus five goal difference.
Really hurt them in the end, didn't
really
they?
Hurt them and Finland, the unlucky ones to miss out.
Okay, let's hear from the Spain defender Eric Garcia, who spoke to us after the match.
We are really happy for the win, for the way we played, also for the fans, no? The last game we were playing here, it's good to give them a good reward, but obviously we know we've done nothing. We have a really tough game against Croatia. So today we will enjoy it, but tomorrow we will focus on the next game. The only thing I know is that we've been working really hard these three games. The team had a really good attitude. Obviously, we've not been lucky, you know, having our chances. And today, everything went in. So hopefully, this gets the team, I don't know if to say the confidence or I don't know what to, on the next game, you know, go straight in.
Eric Garcia was one of those to come into the Spain team along with Azpilicueta. First appearance since November 2018 for Spain. Busquets was back too as well, the captain. I just wonder as well if the own goal from Dubravka, that crazy own goal where Sarabia had a shot, it looped up off the bar and he pushed it into his own net, maybe relaxed Spain, because I imagine there would have been a lot of tension. They weren't scoring a lot of goals going into this, Chris. It was a big talking point.
It was a huge talking point, and you know that narrative was again quite clear to see. Spain creating lots of chances and not managing to put the ball in the back of the net, and then that happened, and it completely galvanised them, and it might just be the turning point, I think, for their whole European Championship. And it comes slightly back to what Luis Enrique was saying before kickoff. He had a lovely analogy when he was basically talking about them being like, well, either a champagne bottle or a carver bottle. and I think he said carver, but it may well have been mistranslated by someone to champagne, depending on where in the world you are, of course. I know Kev's more of a carver man, so he'll be upset at that. But he basically said, we're like a bottle of that and we are ready to pop. And actually, Kev, that was exactly what
they
happened
did,
after that first goal that went in.
It did. I'll have you know my body is a temple. But there we go. Look, I thought it was potentially a tournament-defining moment for them. You know, I'm always a little bit loath to talk about luck, but it felt like a big slice of luck because how often does the goalkeeper pour the ball into his own net? But then you have to kick on and you have to make the most of that. And they did. And they have great individual quality. I like the way they press. I like the way they play high up the pitch. And it will just stop that debate for a little while. It'll stop that background noise about they can't take chances, they can't score goals. And I think psychologically, to have a bit of breathing space in that way could be very important for them.
It's a boiling hot night as well. So I think Luis Enrique would have liked the fact he could take some of his his main starters off as well as the game was done and dusted, and they still got a couple more. But just one player who was an absolute joy to watch was Pedri again.
Yeah, he's my crazy word. Good,
he is. You know,
you said Iniesta.
I did, and I'm loath to say it because you know Xavi and Iniesta are two of the greatest midfielders ever to have played the game for me. But Pedri is just, he is the guy that, you know, if I was going to buy a ticket to watch someone at Euro 2020, I think I might genuinely
even that
pick
little
him.
Clip all over for Gerard Moreno, just, wasn't it? I mean, he was sensational. Laporte, by the way, obviously, that was a big talking point, getting that goal for Spain for the first time. Ferran Torres, little backheel finish. For that. I mean, so much to talk about in this game. But let's go to Lindsay Hooper, who's at the UEFA Football Village in London.
I'm joined by Alejandro, a Spain fan, and ecstatic, a big grin there on your face.
Yes, absolutely. Like, finally we see like a good performance of the team. We have been waiting for like three matches for this to happen. So yeah, very, very happy.
What is it that you think's clicked?
So I think it's just like the confidence. I think finally, like today, we had to win. There was no doubt about that. So I think the team went for it. They haven't been shy. They have been playing like forward from the beginning. So I think they have been just very confident. And things started happening. So after the first goal, that's it, right? Like they got unleashed.
Lindsay Hooper in the UEFA Football Village in London. By the way, Alvaro Morata did get a wonderful reception when he came off in Seville after his performance. Slovakia unable to progress, and they'll be so disappointed given they beat Poland on match day one. So it means it is Croatia versus Spain in the last 16 on Monday in Copenhagen. That looks a very tasty tie, but how are the Croatians feeling about it? Well, Elvir Islamovic is UEFA's Croatia team reporter, and he joins us now. Hi, Elvir.
Hello, good evening.
So first of all, what is your what were your reactions and thoughts to Spain's 5-0 win over Slovakia? Were you impressed?
You mean you just caught me checking the flight ticket from Denmark to Zagreb after I heard we are playing Spain. So, you know, you just caught me there. Yeah, what can I say? I mean, I always talk to you when there are some bad news, you know, after England match, then after I heard we play Spain.
There's so, no bad news, Elvi.
Why didn't you call me last night when we won? No, it's a different mood now.
So you're worried about the Spanish, are you?
I mean, you watch the match, so yeah, it's, you know. The problem is that it happened to Croatia again after Euro 2016. We were waiting for the opponent, and then Iceland conceded the goal in the last seconds, and then we get to play against Portugal. And we lost, and Portugal won the championship. And now it was the same thing. We were waiting Sweden match, and Sweden were 2-2 against Poland. They conceded. They scored now in the last seconds, and we get to play against Spain now. So obviously Spain will win Euro if we are looking at that.
Elvis, it sounds like there was a collective sigh across Croatia then. But of course, and a lot is going to be talked before this match about Luka Modric playing against Spain and the fact there are no Real Madrid players in the Spanish squad, but there is Luka Modric in the Croatia team. He's going to be so looking forward to this game, isn't he?
Yeah, obviously he's representing Real Madrid in this match.
It's unusual.
Really awkward. But yeah, I mean, it will be a big match. I mean, the match against Spain is, if you lose that match, you know, nobody say to you that, you know, you're disappointed because it's Spain and they win 5-0 now. It will be extremely difficult for Croatia. But I remember it was Euro 2016. Croatia played against Spain, the last match in the group stage. It was a match for the top spot in the group. And Croatia won. Croatia won 2-1 in Bordeaux. And I remember that night like it was today. And I was staying outside of the stadium watching, you know, the official match statistic where it was Croatia 2, Spain 1, and I was really, guys, this is incredible. And we won the group then, and then we you know, played against Portugal and, you know, what happened. But, you know, Croatia showed that with Modric and Perisic, the other guys, we can defeat Spain. Oh, we lost 6-0. That was the bad moment after the World Cup. First Croatia match after the World Cup was against Spain in the Nations League. We lost 6-0 in Spain. But I mean, we need to forget that it won't happen again. In the next Nations League match in Zagreb, Croatia won again, 3-2. So obviously there is a power in Croatia that we can defeat Spain. But when you're checking that now, I mean, of course it's easier to play against Sweden than Spain. especially after Spain won final. So it will be a big match for Modric as well, because it might be his last match for Croatia. I mean, you never know, maybe he decide to retire the team. He's almost 36. But I'm sure he will be another time, he will be a star of the match.
Super goal against Scotland the other day. And like Spain, in a sense, Croatia have improved as the tournament's gone on. What are your thoughts now on the Croatian team after their win against Scotland?
I talked to the players and to the coach after the match and today as well. That's the Croatia we want to see. You know, that's real Croatia. They are playing, they are fast, they are aggressive. They are going in attack. They are defending. Okay, defense was not on the top level, but they were playing really good, creative. That's Croatian play. Modric is a boss. He's the leader, with Perisic also as a key player. So we all agree that that's Croatia we want to see. But, you know, they were inspired yesterday, definitely, with that Luka Modric goal. I mean, it's one of his best goals at Euros. He's the guy who scored at three different Euros, the first Croatian who scored at three different Euros. He's the youngest Croatian and the oldest Croatian who scored at Euros.
It's so not bad, is it?
Amazing. He's really brilliant. He's brilliant. And not only the player, he's a great guy outside of the pitch. He's a real leader. So, you know, he's a real example of the you know, one of the best Croatian players ever. So I'm very happy about him.
Okay, Elvira, I promise next time we call you, good news only.
Please, maybe in 4 years.
Elvira, thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you very much. I hope to speak to you after this game again.
Us too.
Cheers, guys.
Elvira Islamovic, UEFA's Croatia team reporter. We've got a great team out there, haven't we, Chris? Really. So plenty more from him, hopefully, throughout the course of the competition. Plenty more to come as we preview more ties in the round of 16, with a focus on Italy versus Austria and Denmark versus Wales.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Okay, well, the round of 16 begins on Saturday. Chris, you can run us through the draw again.
Yeah, so the draw is going to be absolutely fascinating, isn't it? Round of 16 starts, as you mentioned, on Saturday in Amsterdam, Wales against Denmark, and then later that night, Italy against Austria at Wembley. On Sunday, the Netherlands play Czech Republic in Budapest, and Belgium play Portugal in Seville. On Monday, it is Croatia against Spain in Copenhagen and France versus Switzerland in Bucharest. And then the round of 16 finishes on Tuesday, the 29th of June, with the small matter of England-Germany at Wembley and Sweden against Ukraine in Glasgow.
You know, a game's a big one if someone uses the expression "the small matter
of." I know. ginormous matter of.
Okay, well, let's start with Wales versus Denmark then. And the Scandinavian side have had the most incredible and emotional journey of any team at Euro 2020 so far. Our Denmark team reporter is Sture Sando, and he joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Sture.
It's good to be back.
Of course, Denmark have been playing their games at home and they had that incredible win against Russia at the end of the group stage. What's the mood been like in the country since that victory and progression to the knockouts?
Well, the Euro fever has just been going more and more crazy, I would say. Right now, every time you walk down the street, you see the Danish flag hanging from either balconies or windows. All jerseys, national team jerseys, are sold out in the country. People are, of course, wearing their jerseys all the time. And usually you see club jerseys from the biggest clubs in Europe represented in the schoolyards. But now it's the national team all over. It's quite amazing.
And what's been the reaction to the fact that Denmark are going to play Wales on Saturday in Amsterdam? I guess certainly the way that you've been speaking, it sounds like the public and the players will go into that game pretty confident they can make it through to the quarterfinals.
They are not disappointed with the way it all turned out in the end. Now they are out of the group, but first of all, they just wanted to get out of this group. And actually, I think that they would be keen on taking on every opponent they would be facing, because they have shown that they can play with the best, and I think they are very ambitious. So they want to show what they are capable of when they are not completely shocked. Yeah, they have their minds where they should be, of course, Wales is an opponent that you would you'd like to meet when you look at the others that you could run into. But on the other hand, I think this is going to be interesting because, of course, Denmark were the favorites when they faced Finland. But that match was not a real football match, I'd say. And then against Belgium, they were the underdogs. And against Russia, it was kind of 50-50, I think. So now they are maybe the favorites this time. And they have to deal with that now everybody expects them to make a result, because ever since the unfortunate events in the first match, they have been given the opportunity to just play as it didn't matter how it would turn out in the end. There was no bad feelings when they lost to Belgium, and I don't think there would have been if they lost to Russia as well. But now I think they will start to feel the pressure.
And Stuart, I mean, Chris might back me up here, but I don't know if you felt the love from the wider football community in that it feels like Denmark's everyone's second team, really. I mean, after what happened with Christian Eriksen, the fact that they produced such a thrilling performance against Russia in that final, it does feel like that, doesn't it, Chris?
Well, we both actually celebrated when Andreas Christensen scored that goal.
It was just such a brilliant moment. And do you feel that? Is that being felt in Denmark? The people, you know, aside from the teams that you come up against, so in this case, the Welsh, people are rooting for you. People want Denmark to do well.
Yeah, you can feel that. You can feel that. If you look anywhere on social media, you can obviously tell that it's Denmark is the fairy tale story of this Euro, and everybody who goes up against Denmark are the bad guys, so to speak. Nobody wants to be the team to kick Denmark out of this. I think, and it's quite amazing to see how people from all over the world are rooting for Denmark. It's and the players are aware as well. When I were at the match on Monday, you could also feel it in the commentary positions that it was not because anybody didn't like Russia. It was just the feeling about this team and the storyline when Denmark came 2-0 ahead and then Russia got a penalty. We heard that Belgium had scored, but that goal was overruled, and then suddenly it didn't look so good. And then in the last 20, 15 minutes, it just all exploded. And I must say the atmosphere in that stadium was... I'm still out of words because I was so...
it looked amazing.
So yeah, extreme. It looked amazing. It was so intense. You know, all the players threw out their jerseys. At the moment, a lot of students are getting their exams, and one of the students threw in his hat. He didn't actually knew what he was doing. It was just like... he just went with the flow. And then the players came back with... his hat after actually at Mikkel Damsgaard had been wearing it and with a jersey and so on, and it was just one big family and it was all love. And when I went home, it was like 1:30 in the night, and people were still being around the stadium singing, drinking the beers left and just celebrating like they won something, and we are just actually qualified for the knockout stage.
Yeah, got through a group, yeah. Stuart, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Our Denmark correspondent, Stuart Sando there. As for Wales, then defender Ben Davies and manager Rob Page have been speaking about making it into the last 16.
I'm extremely proud. I have been now for the last few months since I stepped up as head coach. Proud for me, proud of that group of players in there. You know, a lot of them deserve a lot of credit for the performances they've given. It was a big ask to get out of the group, to get through to the knockout stages. We've done it. And like I said, they deserve all the plaudits they're getting at the moment.
Here, Wales have improved. Moore! Kiefer Moore has scored a goal for them at the European Championship.
I think we showed a lot of resilience. I think we showed a lot of fight, a lot of character. But you know what? That's where we build our foundations. But we showed that we can play in some of the games. We created a lot of chances. And it bodes well going into the next few games. We're a small nation. We've got a lot of honour to play for Wales. Everybody loves being here. And when you're fighting for that bad, kind of fighting against the world as a small country, it really does bring you together.
Still Bale. And tucked in by Conor Roberts. Wales have a second goal.
So we're all ambitious. I am as a coach, they are as players. And we want to go as far as we can. We're taking each game as it comes. We're not naive going into this game. It's an extremely tough game. We've watched them play against Belgium and the most recent game, and you can't be anything other than impressed by what they do and how they go, what they work. So we know we're in for a tough game, but we also know that on our day, we can give anybody a good game.
Rob Page there, the Welsh head coach. Ben Davis before that. Really interesting reading some of these quotes from Rob Page since the defeat to Italy. He says, he was asked, what have you learned from the group stage? And he said, I've learned to trust myself more. And that's understandable, Kev, because he's a guy who came into this with basically no head coach experience prior to stepping in late as Wales boss.
Yeah, that's right. And he is learning on the job. And he's done a terrific job. He's been able to keep that group together on the same page. There have been no flare-ups, no problems. You know, there's a real sense of cohesion, a real sense of them all fighting for the same goal. And what I loved, and this is actually, I know we're going to talk about kind of favourite moments of the tournament. Mine, even despite that incredible Christensen goal the other night, mine is the look of pure joy and pride on the face of Conor Roberts when he scores that goal against Turkey. Because that was such an important moment for some of the younger players in that squad, some of the guys that weren't involved in Euro 2016, they needed their moment. Some of the guys like Bale and Ramsey had had theirs, they needed theirs, and that really felt like it was for Wales. I think they've done a terrific job. I think they were second best against the Swiss and found a way to get a result, and that's proven to be crucial.
Well, Gareth Bale said after the game, we need patching up and some time to recover. They do have that, and they did make three changes for the defeat to Italy, including Ben Davis coming out of the side. But the Group A runners-up march on. Let's move on to the other last 16 match on Saturday. It is Italy versus Austria, and it will be played at Wembley at 9 p.m. CEST. They didn't have the biggest expectations coming into the tournament, but the Azzurri have been one of the most exciting teams so far, and two of their players have already scored two goals each.
Here comes Berardi, and he set it up for Locatelli, and this one surely will count. Locatelli, oh, he's done it again, this time from further out. It's certainly worth a shot from distance when that happens, and Ciro Immobile makes full use of the little time that was remaining. Pushed out well, but Immobile tucks in the rebound. No more really than Italy deserve.
OK, then let's get the Italy news ahead of this huge game at Wembley. We can cross to one of our favourite reporters, Paolo Menicucci.
You can't say that, Chris. You can't say everyone's our favourite.
No, well, Paolo is one of our
favourites. I know he
is
one of our favourites, but you're not supposed to say that.
I could say the favourite reporter we've had so far. Paolo, how are you doing?
I think you can say that.
So how are things? I understand you're in Florence at the team's base at the moment. How are they feeling against this, ahead of this huge game in London on Saturday?
Yeah, we're still in Florence. The team is training in Coverciano, preparing for the big game. The enthusiasm is still the same, huge enthusiasm here. You can really see that the players are having a lot of fun together. Today we interview Insigne, and he confirmed all of this, like telling me a bit of how they're having fun when they're traveling too, singing together and joking together. It's really a great group, you can see that.
How impressed have you been, and you've been talking to him obviously, how impressed have you been by Lorenzo Insigne this tournament?
I think he's in his best period of his career, honestly, because he's always been very good player, creative player, but it's never been such a leader like he is today. He's really one of the leaders of the team. You can see how he's ready to sacrifice in defense as well. He's always ready to take responsibilities. He has improved a lot in recent years, and now it's really clear that he's one of the big players of this team, like both on and off the pitch. Like it's like one of the leaders when Italy are playing, but also in the training, keeping the enthusiasm up. Is really a key player of this team for sure. Together with this group of guys from Naples, Donnarumma and Immobile, they're really like the leaders of the training fun. When they're always talking to each other, trying to teach Napolitan to the other, like. And when they're singing together, there is this video that everyone has watched, like singing Notti Magiche, the song of Italy 90, like he was the one with the big radio, and he's the DJ of the team. Like.
I love it. And that, I guess, all helps when it comes to what happens on the pitch. Team news, because I know that Alessandro Florenzi and Giorgio Chiellini are both doubts. How are they doing?
Florenzi hasn't still resumed training with the team, so I will say the game against Austria is coming too soon for him. I'm not sure, but I think so. So Di Lorenzo is probably ready to deputize. Chiellini was training yesterday, but only doing some running, so he's in doubt. When he suffered the injury, just a few days, and there were big hopes for him to return for the round of 16. But I would say he's doubtful, and in this case, Acerbi will replace him.
Just finally, for me, is there any sense that Italy might go into this game overconfident, do you think, given the way they performed in the group stages?
This is a bit my fear as well, but talking to the players, they say that it will not be the case, that they know that every team that arriving so far in this tournament are very good, and they started to study Austria, and they say that they are a really physical, this is what Insigne said, they are a really physical side that press high and can create trouble to Italy when building from the back. I think they are focused on the opponents. They know that that it will not be easy at all, despite coming from a great streak of results. Let's not forget that Italy have won the last 11 games without conceding a goal. But any opponent at this level can create trouble, and they know. I'm fully sure that they know.
And Paolo, it's been a brilliant run to the knockouts. What's been your highlight of Italy's group stage campaign?
Good question. I will say Locatelli's double against Switzerland, because Locatelli has been a prospect for many years, but then he slowed down a bit the career, and then he's up again, and he was called to replace a player as Verratti, that is considered probably one of the most important players in this team. And his double against Switzerland was simply amazing. The first goal, when the long pass for Berardi, and then he followed the action to score from close range, and then a nice shot with the Tardelli celebration. I think for the moment, this is the best performance of the tournament.
We'll take that. We'll take that,
Paolo. Thank you very much. And if you speak to any of your colleagues, please don't tell them I said you were my favourite, because otherwise they might not come back on the show.
It's our little secret.
Cheers, Paolo.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Paolo Minacucci, our Italy team reporter. Well, as for their opposition, Austria, their midfielder Marcel Sabitzer says he can't wait to take on the Azzurri at Wembley in the last 16.
Yeah, I'm very excited. We as a team, we're very excited. It's a special stadium with a lot of tradition and one of the biggest stadiums in Europe. So, yeah, we're happy that we have the opportunity to play there. And if there are more people from Italy, yeah, it doesn't matter on the game, you know. We focus on a game, want to win this game. And yeah, it will be a big game. I'm excited for it and really happy to have the opportunity. But I want to win this game.
Marcel Sabitzer there, the brilliant RB Leipzig attacking midfielder, with me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Kevin Hatchard, to see you out for the rest of the show. Kev, as Marcel said there, oh yeah, a very good game in store in the round of 16.
Look, they're excited. They're really excited. And to an extent, we say they've got nothing to lose. Obviously, they do. They want to get through. They want to progress. And you could hear that at the end of the interview that, you know, we're here, but we want to win it. But the pressure is not on them. The pressure is on Italy.
Is that a good thing, Kev?
Yeah, it's a really good thing, because I think they've already defied expectation. People back home, I think, were sceptical about how far they could get. And you listen to people who follow that Austrian team very, very closely. Quite frankly, they didn't see the performance against Ukraine coming. And the intensity of it, how high they pressed, the solutions they found going forward, I think that did catch the Austrian public to some extent by surprise, and they've done brilliantly. And so Franco Foda, the coach, has, I think, confounded a few of his critics too.
It's a good squad though, wouldn't you say, Kev? It's a lot of Bundesliga players in there.
But that was the issue almost, because Foda was under pressure because he had these great individuals, and they hadn't really, in the build-up to this tournament, looked like a team. But against Ukraine, they really did look like a team, and he's found a way of getting the best out of David Alaba, bringing the ball out from that defensive line. That's worked really well. And in midfield, they've worked ever so hard. They've got a lovely blend in there. Some really hard workers, but some craft in there too.
Okay, so they face off on a Saturday. So let's spend the rest of the show pinging around the rest of the round of 16 games. There's some absolute belters there. So Sunday the 27th, the Dutch versus the Czechs in Budapest. Chris, a little bit of history here.
Yeah, Euro 2004, one of the all-time great matches at the European Championship when the Dutch stormed into a two-goal lead. And in the end, 2 minutes from time, Vladimir Smica scored a winner for the Czech Republic. And I remember watching that game and it was absolutely thrilling. And, you know, the way that the Dutch have played so far, I wouldn't discount something similar, quite frankly.
No, no,
they
no.
seem to be all out attack under Frank de Boer.
Yeah, and we've seen brilliant goals from the Czechs. I mean, in that tournament, it was Milan Baroš who was outstanding. Patrick Schick has been getting the goals for them. Kev, what do you reckon? The Dutch have got their main goal-scoring threat seems to be from central midfield and right back.
I very much enjoyed how they've played. They've been really front foot. They've been great out wide. Denzel Dumfries has been brilliant, as you've alluded to there. Patrick Van Aanholt's done a great job, but he's got backup in Wijndal as well. I think Gini Wijnaldum's been absolutely sensational in the middle of the park. I think he has gone up a level in the last few years. We've seen his performances for Liverpool in the UEFA Champions League, and I think he is a real genuine leader. Memphis has been dangerous too, but there are some frailties there too, and I think the Czechs can take advantage of those, so this could be a cracker.
The other game on Sunday is your pick, Kev, Belgium-Portugal. Why are you so excited about this one?
Oh, I love it. You've got top-class attacking talents everywhere you look. You've got two very clever coaches. I love the way Roberto Martinez works. I think he's done a really good job under great pressure with Belgium, not just in this tournament, but in the World Cup as well. And it's going to be one of those games that you feel is decided by magic moments from genuine match winners.
De Bruyne, Ronaldo.
You've got them everywhere. Brilliant. It's exactly what you want in a tournament like this.
Yeah, and you know what? If you look at the draw as well, given that we've said the first 2 days, you definitely want to be in the bottom half of the draw, not the top half. Look at those teams who would then potentially meet in the quarterfinals and the semifinals. Italy, Netherlands, Belgium, Portugal. I think if you know, and teams don't and players don't, I genuinely believe they just want to beat whoever they're next playing. But fans will be thinking, I'm happy if I'm supporting one of the nations in the bottom half of the section. But as we've seen at this Euro, discount nothing.
Ronaldo has become the first European player in World Cup and Euro history to score a combined 20 goals across the two competitions. He finds records that you didn't even think really existed. But 5 goals he scored or assisted in every match he's played in so far. On Monday, Croatia-Spain, we heard from Elvia earlier in the show. So let's get to France-Switzerland. Kev, France, overwhelming favourites. But we have seen some brilliant moments from the Swiss, haven't we, in this competition?
Yeah, we have. Jadon Chakiri's brace against Turkey, including a magnificent long-range strike. It was great to see him come to the party, as he so often does in major tournaments. But this is the big barrier for the Swiss. They so often get out of the group stage and then trip at the first hurdle in the knockout. So they've got history against them, and they have an exceptional French team against them as well.
And on Tuesday, we've already discussed Sweden taking on Ukraine. So how about England-Germany to finish, Chris?
Yeah, and look, Gareth Southgate, the England coach, Euro 96, missed the penalty in the semi-final. That shot of redemption. It's such that this tie, you know, you don't have to talk about it really. It's going to be fantastic, and the atmosphere at Wembley is going to be huge, and it's going to be a huge test of character for both teams.
One thing England must do is play the game and don't play the occasion.
Yep.
I don't feel they did that against Scotland. I think they got a bit swept up in the whole thing, and we didn't see the best England that we can see. They must focus on the opponent and not the occasion and all of the background noise. That goes for Germany too, but I think it's especially salient for England in this case.
It's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, the team are based in England, Chris. It's at Wembley, but that's an advantage in itself, and perhaps one that was being underplayed about the prize of finishing top in that group.
Yeah, I think so. But from the moment that tie came out, you can guarantee in England every radio station, every newspaper, everybody on social media who has any interest in football will be talking about the history. And as Kevin said, the teams have to ensure they play the here and now.
Good news for Germany. They were able to bring on Thomas Müller in some condition in their game against Hungary. Do you play Saka?
Yes.
Do you play Grealish?
Yep.
Do you play Foden?
Probably. No, because I play Sterling.
You're playing Sterling. Kev, what do you reckon?
I'd be very tempted to bring Foden back, but I understand the clamour for Grealish. But I'd actually use Grealish as an impact sub.
Personally. Oh, you did? I thought you were going to sit on the fence at the end there, Kev, but good job. Kev, thank you very much for your company.
Cheers, guys.
Chris, thank you for yours as well.
Yeah, it's been what an end to the group stage. Fantastic.
Thank you to listening for us during what has been an enthralling group stage. We hope to keep you listening all the way to the final of Wembley Stadium on the 11th of July. Our next show is at 11 p.m. CEST on Saturday the 26th of June, when we'll be reacting to Italy, Austria and Wales, Denmark. And then we're on air every match night after the final game, or later, of course, if there's extra time and penalties. Remember that you can also subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your shows. It's been great having you company through the groups, and we'll see you next time for the start of the knockouts.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.